Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're back covering Dublin Bay South. We are continuing to cover Dublin Bay South. And Martin, I don't know if you saw earlier, someone asked me again, what's the story with Mr. Gagan? And we were asked on Twitter for the guy who said twice now, oh yes, I'll do it. And twice has then failed to return my email. So James, if you are listening, it's not a good look if you're ducking. It's just not helping.
I'm so easy to get on with, Tony.
I just don't understand. I think they're afraid of me. I love that. No, much more importantly, we're delighted to be joined by the People Before Profit candidate in Dublin Bay South, Bridget Purcell. Bridget, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me on.
It's been a whirlwind, and yet it seems to be going the longest. We've said previously this is the longest running by-election in the history of the state. First of all, how have you found it yourself?
Well, I'm not going to say that I wasn't surprised when Owen Murphy's seat opened up. I just accepted a new job that started a month ago. So I've been trying to juggle this campaign and working full time. So it's been certainly an experience. But it's you know, I never expected this to be kind of where I'd be right now, but I'm excited. If anything, this allows me to kind of draw attention to a lot of issues that are happening in Dublin Bay South, which I'm delighted about, because there's a lot of shadowy places that don't get much light, and I'd like to be a lamp of some sort. It's been great. Thanks for asking.
You said, were you always going to be the candidate in the area if something like this came up?
We have a democratic process that we go through, but I had been the rep, but I was only just newly made the rep. None of us were expecting this to happen, not for a while anyway. But I feel I'm fully backed up by the party. I've had the TDs come out to canvass for me, and you know, I feel good about it. I probably wouldn't be in the space to be having an interview and working and canvassing and running a campaign if I didn't feel like it was going well, and it's going well. So energized and whatnot.
Bridget, we've spoken to a few other candidates and the general issues in the area seem to be housing, childcare, health, particularly mental health. Are you getting anything different to that?
I'm getting a lot of that. I'm also getting a lot of people who are, you know, talking about like being worker as like anytime, you rarely get to answer the door to a service industry person because they're probably at work, but when you do, you hear, you know, oh, anti-mask people coming in. I'm so sick of, you know, if anybody wants to give out about wearing a mask, the only people who are allowed to give out about wearing a mask are, you know, nurses, people who have to wear them in hospitals and stuff, and people who have to like work in Lidl and work in like cafes and restaurants because you don't know pain of wearing a mask until you've been wearing it for a 10-hour shift. I'm telling you that much.
Can I come in on that? Yeah. It's very timely today that you saw, because let's tell the truth, Martin, to Bridget, you're about half my age and about a third of Martin's age. Today we heard, you know, we're going to do this. We want restaurants and bars in these service industries to kind of open to the guys who are like Martin. You got the Johnson & Johnson one shot, out you go. And it's like, well, we would like you to continue to work there, but you can't avail of the products and services. What did you think of that when you heard this it's segregation, is it?
Well, you know, I saw somebody on Twitter kind of put it pretty succinctly. Like, what does the 24-year-old worker do when they're eating their lunch at work? Do they have to sit outside? Obviously I'm running not just for young people, obviously. You know, if you're a TD, you're a TD for everyone. But I just think that it's it's hard out there for for an under 30, you know. We're the last lot for the vaccine. I don't think I'm getting my vaccine until September, if the schedule is going the way it is. Hopefully that speeds up, but at the moment it's looking like September. So I mean, we're looking at young people who they've had to put their life on hold for a year and a half, and like that's what we were supposed to do, obviously.
Got to pause the podcast for a moment to ask you for your support. We are putting out a phenomenal amount of podcasts at the moment. We are going in depth, trying to cover Dublin Bay South, trying to cover policing, some of the issues that have come up with there are also we're doing a policing on events in the north very soon. We've got a lot on, Martin, as you know, and but unfortunately it needs to be paid for. And one of the ways this stays free is if you can pay, you can pay that to keep it out there. And that means other people maybe benefit who can't pay. And I know that sounds like a utopian dream, but I believe it can be done. I believe people actually care about the greater good. If we didn't, we wouldn't be doing this pod, Martin.
Well, they do, Tony, because they've said so and they've told us that, you know, people have been very straightforward about this. They would like to see the pods available for everybody. So that's how we fund it. You know, we make it available for everybody. It's just that we need more of you to help. That's it, full stop.
Yeah. Look, it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. There's a range of tiers there. There are exclusives. There's loads of exclusives and extra content because, you know, there are certain things we do that will never go out beyond the paywall, probably for good defamation reasons, Martin. But nonetheless, But it's really, really top quality stuff. And it's a great community. Really love the patrons who support. And I do, if you're a patron and you're listening, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we really do appreciate it. But yeah, Tony's right. More patrons, patreon.com/tortoiseshack.
Let you get back to your podcast. Thank you.
So, I mean, we're looking at young people who they've had to put their life on hold for a year and a half. And like, that's what we were supposed to do, obviously. You know, we have to look out for other people, but then when it turns, then like the people that we were trying to look after turn around and say, well, we can just cut you out of this. We're dealing with high rents. We're dealing with still living in our parents' houses. We're dealing with wage stagnation and working in low wage jobs. We're not going to be vaccinated. And now we're told that a privilege that's being given to everybody else is being taken away from us. I don't know. It's beggar's belief. It's frustrating.
See, I kind of see it a little differently. I think NPHET know that there's never going to be a COVID passport to go in and out of pubs. But had they said you just can't reopen, it's just not safe enough, that they would have gotten a huge backlash, much more than they actually have at the moment. It's much easier
but
to say.
Martin, hang on, no, but NPHET don't govern. The government governs.
No. And I keep saying this. It's not NPHET is the whipping boy.
I'm conscious we're here to talk about the campaign, Bridget, itself. But I think it's just important to get that perspective across there. And it is kind of, you know, I mean, I hate to say, but it's my generation that are the ones that are looking down going, ah, come on, you can put up with it for another few weeks. You just and if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to go and have my chicken wings inside and watch the match.
I don't think it's a generational thing. I don't think that we can all point our fingers at a certain age group and be like, and this is why, you know, you're ruining it for everyone. But I do think I'm getting like a lot of the times when I'm knocking on doors, I do get people being like, I won't be able to vote. I'm actually leaving the country. And I'm getting that over and over and over again. And that's hard to hear because I've already lost a lot of friends to immigration. You know, when we open up again and I can finally go out and, you know, hit Workman's and, you know, go to the whatever nightclub is left. I don't have that many people to ask to, you know, to hang out anymore because they've left. And this idea of vaccine passports, you know, I don't think it's going to encourage people to stay. That's how I'd put that.
It's interesting though, because in the constituency that you are, it's got like one of the highest levels of home ownership and yet one of the highest levels of like there's a huge, I think the renting average is twice the national average. And in that, then when you look at the the cohorts of every opinion poll you see, anybody from 18 to 34 is voting left. But they won't be left in the country if we continue to go the way it goes. So can you've made some really excellent promotional videos, campaign videos,
and you speak about
a couple of things. You spoke really well about, obviously, but housing and also about the environmental issues, about the climate crisis. You might give us a bit of a flavor of that, because I know we'll be speaking to Claire Byrne from the Greens, but some of the language I've seen from the Climate Action Bill was so woolly that it concerned us, and it concerned not just us, concerned former guests like Attractive Rin, who really knows what she's talking about. Don't take my word for it. You know, what's your take on it?
So climate change is something that I'm extremely concerned about, and I think for a lot of obviously for good reason, and I think for a lot of younger people, it is more of a concern for them than it is for their parents, because we're the ones who are really going to have to deal with the consequences. There's talks of trying to get emissions down for 2030, like, and with the Climate Action Bill, it leaves so many loopholes for, and it allows the government to basically make absolutely no changes or reduce emissions until after they've left. So there's absolutely no accountability. They have no accountability. It relies too heavily on future tech that doesn't exist. I don't know why they thought that was okay to put into a bill and base the entire bill off this tech that doesn't exist. I would like to know in what other bill or legislation that seems appropriate.
It's happened in finance a few times when they use an accounting trick to say that we could use the budget from next year to pay for this year's budget, and they nearly got away with it as well. But but on the climate thing, it does seem to be, when you mention the technical solutions, I keep shuddering at the amount of people who mention ethical capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And you might give us your thoughts on will that get the job done in your opinion, and what are you and PBP offering that's different?
I don't think that you can effectively fight climate change and make a real difference while also adhering to the model that causes it, which is capitalism. I don't know if you've ever had a conversation with a vegan, but the first thing they'll tell you is that the meat industry is one of the biggest contributors, and that's true. So is dairy is one of our largest contributors for emissions, and there's no mention of cutting the dairy herd. That's what we need to do. We need to be cutting the dairy herd. We need to transition away from dairy farming towards more environmental, more environmentally friendly alternatives, like hemp, afforestation. We need to really encourage afforestation in our native trees. There's no mention of that in the climate change or in the climate action bill. That's a massive thing. We also need to start talking about free public transport. If you want to get serious about reducing our emissions and getting people out of cars, you can throw down as many cycle lanes as you want, but at the end of the day, there are people who can't, and I'm a cyclist myself. I'm a big believer in cycling. It's my only form of transport. I can't drive. And the bus is very expensive. But cycling isn't for everyone, because not everybody has the ability to cycle, number one. Not everybody has the mobility to cycle. Climate action and eco-socialism needs to include everyone. That's people who have disabilities, that's children, that's the elderly, it's everybody. It's not just the able-bodied. So we also need to focus on getting people out of cars through free and plentiful public transport. And also sorting out our footpaths. It's a big controversy at the moment. There's a cycle lane trial over in Sandymount, which I'm excited for. We'll see how it goes. I think that it has to happen in conjunction with free and plentiful public transport, but also sorting out the footpaths in Sandymount, because Sandymount is has an elderly population. Not everybody in Sandymount is elderly, but quite a few people are, and the footpath, and a lot of them are on a lot of them may utilize, you know, motorized scooters and things like that, and wheelchairs and prams. There's a lot of, you know, young families in Sandymount as well. And the footpaths are in an absolute state inside Sandymount. They're too narrow. They're broken. They need to be resurfaced. So we need to focus on not just cycle lanes. It has to be bigger than that. And that's kind of the theme, I think, for my criticism for the climate action bill. It's not enough. We need to, you know, climate change isn't concerned about capitalism. It's going to happen regardless. And if we want to start thinking about actually tackling it, we can't be doing things in half measures. We can't be half-assing it. You know, you do it with your whole chest, or
don't do it.
What's the point? Yeah,
Bridget, can I ask you? You know, there's big differences around that constituency, around Dublin Bay South. There is a big socioeconomic divide between different areas. Do you find it a harder sell in the more wealthy areas for people before profit?
It can be, but people are still very hungry for change. I think a lot of people feel disaffected. You know, they voted for change in the general election and they didn't get it. And that's really sad. I voted for change in the general election and I'm looking at pretty much the same thing, you know, and which is fairly frustrating. I'm seeing a lot of anger in the more wealthier areas. You tend to have adult children wrecking their parents' heads, and their parents, they're like, I need my 27-year-old son out of the house. Yeah. I can't do this anymore. And he's thinking the same thing. So you have them who are extremely frustrated and kind of leaning our way. Also, a lot of these like more well-to-do areas will have like, I don't know, you say when you knock on doors, you have, you know, 9 doorbells.
A lot of renting. You're like,
there we go. Yeah. There's a lot of renting there's a lot of renting in like Ranelagh, Rathmines, Harold's Cross. There's a lot of renters. And they're very eager to hear what I'm saying. Unfortunately, a lot of them will be like, my vote's still in Cavan. And I'm like, lads,
we discussed this, Tony, that there's an awful lot of people in that constituency whose votes will be elsewhere.
Yeah.
And they will, you know, they're not going to shift the votes up, particularly when renting is so transient at the moment. You can be gone next week. Why would you shift your vote to an address which you may not be at?
Well, because it's in your own interest. We had Jack Sheehan on who wrote that brilliant piece of the Tribune about Dublin and the rentier capitalism, and he's moved his vote. He's renting in your constituency. And
here's the thing now, while the registration was open, we would carry forms to be like, this is how you change your address. You just have to pop down to your local Garda station. And everyone who was like, oh, my address is back home, everyone would take a form. We're not pushing the forms on them, but they'd be like, oh, actually, yeah, can I take that? And they'd fill out the form and they got registered, you know? I hope, anyway. that it's people are hungry for change. And, you know, I'm hoping that they see me as the alternative that'll bring that about.
Realistically, and I mean this without being fatalistic, it was obviously framed as, okay, look, first of all, Fine Gael made a huge mistake of not running Kate O'Connell.
Yeah.
That actually was the only thing that opened up the two other candidates. Sinn Féin have run an excellent candidate, a well-known, high-profile candidate in Lynn Boylan. We've seen an opinion poll last night that puts Ivana Bacic nip and tuck with James Gagan. But your influence in this might not necessarily be on actually winning, Bridget. I put it to you, your influence will be how far you can drag other candidates to the left and other politics to the left.
I mean, I wouldn't say that the door is closed on me quite yet. I wouldn't be running if I didn't think I could win. But I'm getting a lot of, I seem to resonate with people, which, you know, I'm glad I do. But on the other hand, like, people before profit isn't really just about elections. You know what I mean? Obviously, elections are important. Legislation is important. And I'd love to be in the Dáil, you know? Like, I'm glad I resonate with people. And I don't think the door is closed on me yet. I'm getting a lot of what I'm hearing on the doors is people very angry and people also happy to see an alternative. And but the other thing is about People Before Profit is that we're not just electoral politics. Like, we're also community supports, grassroots movements, and it's a combination of the two, you know, direct action and political action. And I think that's what makes us so different. Also, we're never going to get into coalition with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, so that's out the window. We're happy enough to listen if our presence is driving other parties left, that's only a good thing. But also, like, the other really important work we do is direct action. It's supporting the Debenhams workers. It's
you were involved in that yourself, weren't you?
I do overnights on a Sunday and Tuesday. Oh, it was grand in the summer, and then after October it got really hard. and then we had the ceasefire over Christmas and stuff when we went into the, was it the second or third lockdown? I don't even remember.
It was the third lockdown at Christmas.
Third lockdown, we had a ceasefire. But then, you know, we'd have red alerts that you'd have to, don't even get me started on the red alerts. We'd have, we'd get word from an insider or something, you know, that something fishy was going on. And so we'd all have to keep our phones on us and then be able to, like, leg it over to whichever Debenhams store it was within our, you know, 5K. I had a go bag on me at all times. I was constantly, like, boiling the kettle for my thermos because, like, you don't know when it's going to happen. And just very stressful, but very formative. I'm glad that I was part of that. I'm glad I was part of that. I'm gutted at the resolution of that.
Yeah.
But it's not the end. The ladies have said themselves, like, they've got the moment that the government postponed the vote on the bill to kind of ensure the Debenhams bill to kind of ensure that this doesn't happen to any other workers. Once they pushed that back a year, the Debenhams workers set alarms on their phones for 2 weeks before, you know, that time next year, because they're going to be up there and they're going to be raising hell trying to get that bill signed, and we're going to be with them. And that's why it's important that we're in this race. You know, people power is what we believe in, and people power is what got us marriage ref. People power is what's got us repeal the eighth. People power, you know, is what defeated the water charges. It wasn't politicians that did that. And as much as I want to be in the Dáil, and I want to be in the Dáil, I would be great in the Dáil. It also is important to remember that your voice is not just your vote. Your voice is also your feet on the ground. It's your fists in the air, you know. It's being there and being there for your community, empowering yourself, taking your power back. Because particularly a lot of younger people that I've been talking to, you know, they see the only option is emigration, because they can't build a life here. And I'm like, no, stay here, give out, go down, protest every day. And once restrictions are lifted, I'm by God, there's going to be some protests.
You're you're speaking Martin's language now. We are actually. This is a bigger question again, away from the campaign. I do feel that there's going to be a lot of protests now. I think the palpable sense of anger is not going to dissipate, and I think people will not forget that they grieved in the way that they were forced to grieve. And they won't forget, despite people saying it's Neffet's fault, NIAC's fault, that the reason we had to go through all of this is because there was a lack of ICU beds and an underfunded, you know, not enough consultants, not enough doctors, not enough nurses, all of this stuff that they've known about for over a decade. Since 2009, one report said that they had to more than double the number of ICU beds, and they ignored it.
I mean, the WHO has been asking First World Nations for about, since SARS, that you have to run, like the World Health Organization has been asking First World countries since SARS that you have to run drills on pandemics. You have to do it. Like, we know the big one is on the way. And we just chose not to. And you see the you see how countries that were affected by SARS, you know, fared better in the pandemic. It's because they had that experience. And they kind of knew what they had, a kind of plan. We had no plan, even though we were asked for one. So, like, also on top of that, the idea of, you know, sacrificing our public health for 2 weeks at Christmas, you know, it's, I'm, you know, I talk about anti-lockdown. I'm very anti-lockdown. I do not want to get into another lockdown. And that's why I don't want to see unvaccinated workers having to expose themselves to COVID. I don't want to go through another lockdown. They're so hard. And I understand the frustration, but the reason we go through these lockdowns is a mismanagement from the government's end. That's why. It's not listening to experts. It's putting the economy before people's lives, and then turning around and telling everybody after we lost 3,000 people over Christmas, like, the economy's doing well. Doing well for who? Doing well for who? Because it's not doing well for me. It's not doing well for my peers. And it's not doing well for the people whose doors I knock on. We have a crumbling health system. We're facing a massive housing crisis where our wages have stagnated. Like, doing well for who? We have almost, we've gutted our public services. I will accept that the economy is doing well when we have everybody housed, when we have a nationalized health service, when we've restored our public services, and when we have a living wage. Until then, like, trot on with your good economy. It means nothing to me, and it means nothing to ordinary people as well.
I think it shows that you are a very different candidate to, shall we say, the establishment candidates, Bridget. And we have a lot of establishment candidates mm-hmm. running in the area who their message is really quite similar to each other. Your message is quite different. Do you think that's an asset?
I think so. I think people, again, I seem to resonate with people because, you know, I live in reality. You know, I live in reality. I know what it's like to work a minimum wage job and still have to pay rent.
Ah, Bridget, the Irish Times, you know, letter page is reality. Stop.
to me, reality is like working, renting, and just trying to make do, you know. That's what, and just trying to live as comfortable a life as you can for yourself and for your family. And that doesn't seem, you know, that seems to not connect. And, you know, that idea that that's what everybody wants doesn't seem to connect with the government, because that's, austerity is not how you get people to live decent lives. And it seems that that's their only option for how we pay for COVID. So I don't know. I hope people like engage in what I'm saying. And I think they are. You know, I think we just need more people based in reality, to be honest, to be running in the doll.
Bridget Purcell, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and chat with us. We do wish you the very best in the by-election. And we do hope that we'll see more of you in the future. As I've said to every candidate we've interviewed, we could see you post budget in another election run in the same area. So we also keep our fingers crossed for that. Thank you very much for taking the time and coming over to chat with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Bridget. We will be back tomorrow with Luke Ming Flanagan, Martin.
We're going to talk about Luke's best day ever, Tony.
Let me just check. There's also Social Justice Ireland podcast coming as well on the housing situation. Bridget, thanks so much for talking to us. We do appreciate it, and all the best. And it was great to speak to someone who is not a professional politician. That's always a novelty these days. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin. Martin and Tony. Speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.